I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, I'm Keith Ewan, and this is the BT Sport Matter GP podcast. Today I'm joined by Neil Hodgson and Julian Ryder in San Marino ahead of round 13 of the season. Afternoon, boys. Jules, I think we've got to look back, really, haven't we? The domination of Maverick Viñales, first of all.
Robot.
Have to blow smoke in a certain sensitive area, as far as you're concerned, because you were the man that had your money on him right from the... Actually, you didn't have money on him, and you should have done, because the man next to you would have lost.
That's the only thing I am... remorseful about. I didn't actually try and take money off Hodgson.
I would have taken the bet as well. I would have lost money. You said you was so confident about it. That's what I was.
It looked after the test at Checo and what he did in the wet at Checo, there's obviously a leap had been made with that motorbike. For me, the only question is could he get it off the line? And when he did, no one saw which way he went.
Well, for me, the big question was the fact that nobody really had a run at Silverstone. We had a cold and windy Friday, we had a wet and windy Saturday, and then we had race day with different conditions again. How much, Neil, in your experience, would that have brought the main factory teams of Honda and Yamaha back towards the independents?
Yeah, well, that definitely helped. What we've seen with that Suzuki, he'd be the sort of the Friday world champion almost, because he's been top three pretty much every Friday, and you'd say, oh, Maverick's definitely going to fight for the podium this weekend. And as the weekend goes on, it's almost like the more experienced factories sort of just find those tents here and there, and the Suzuki seemed to have just plateaued. But so I do think that worked for him. But wasn't he just amazing?
Astonishing.
Every time it showed him on track, he looked inch perfect. He looked like he belonged there. He looked like a MotoGP winner, an experienced one.
The Suzuki and the rider have looked good all year long, without putting too much of a dampener on what you've just said. But the big deal for me with the Suzuki was it got off the line twice. That's the first time we've seen the thing start. We've seen it qualifying well, but it always seems to have got itself mired in the pack right early on and not given them a chance to perform perhaps like that.
That's it. And then you look at the lap times. He was straight into the 202s. He stayed there for 9 laps. Went into... Obviously, I think changed the map, I would assume, and the rest of the race was in the threes.
Well, I don't know if he changed the map. He looked at his pit board and it said plus 4 seconds, and you think, do you know what? I don't need to do twos anymore. Well, let's not risk it. You know, I don't know if that's the case.
I'm guessing as well.
Yeah, so whatever he did, it worked.
Yeah, Rossi did 2 02s. Cal did 3, and they were in groups. Marquez did 7, but they were randomly scattered right through the race.
It sums up what we saw, that sporadic, sort of inconsistent, apex missing, wild, entertaining Marc Marquez.
So, is Maverick Viñales as special as everyone makes him out to be? Is he going to be an alien? Is he an alien?
He's not an alien yet in my eyes. He's going to be an alien next year. We will see him. He will be a regular top 3, 4. What do you think, Jules?
Is he an alien? No, not yet.
No.
But he's very, very close.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, then. Twitter question from Andrew Mantle. In light of Maverick's victory, do you think he should have stayed with Suzuki for 2017? Oh. Good question.
Great question. great question. Well, it's one of those, should he? Well, we'd all... Honestly, I think we'd all like to have seen him stayed because of the hard work Suzuki have done, and they took a gamble signing him early on, straight from Moto2.
1 year in Moto2 and straight in to a new project.
Exactly. So they definitely took a bit of a gamble. But like we said, when he signed for Yamaha, how many championships, how many races have Yamaha won, and how many have Suzuki won? And from that standpoint, for me personally, it was a no-brainer.
Yeah. It's a shame in many ways. There's a romantic side that says, wouldn't it be great to see him take the project through? But Suzuki aren't going to be slow next year with Yanone on it.
No,
agreed.
Maverick Viñales come a long way since having Paris Hilton as his sponsor.
incredible, isn't it? What was that? Was that about 2011 or?
It was in the very early days.
It was 2011, which, yeah. I remember seeing him then thinking he won't even know who she is. Not that anyone does anyway now. There is a question. Yeah. Where is
what
Paris
is she?
Hilton? What is she? It's another story altogether. That's another podcast.
Probably not one from BT Sport Motor Grand Prix.
Cal Crutchlow. What about the performance from Cal Crutchlow? I mean, in the conditions on qualifying day, maybe. We've seen him perform in the wet. We've seen him hustle that bike for a lap many, many times. But race day, step up.
Oh, do you know what? He absolutely blew me away. He did. And as I've done before when I do podcasts or when I'm commentating, I'm always happy to admit when I get it wrong. And at the start of this year, was it the first six races? He didn't have a finish. And I actually thought, do you know what? His days in this paddock are numbered. We've seen the best of Cal and arrivederci pretty much, you know.
I can't argue. This is realism. Yeah. You know, it's very easy to forget after the last two or three races what the situation was in the first half of the year. It was dire.
He was last in the championship. You know, it was... for him to have dug that deep, we know the character, the personality of Cal, that stubborn... I am one of the best, and he's never lost faith in himself, which I respect, because that is probably one of the hardest parts of this job that people don't realise.
And I don't believe the new frame was a magic bullet, by the way. Little to do with it.
No.
Well, let's clarify that, because obviously he was on a chassis that the other two had basically decided they didn't want. Maybe they'll be wanting it back this week.
Yeah, and HRC said they wanted more miles on that chassis, so he puts it in. And we see him outbreak Marc Marquez, which I've never seen. I don't know if Cal has ever done that.
Do you know what? If you look at the last four Grand Prix, I think it's the last four Grand Prix, he scored more points than any other rider out of the top riders. He scored more than every single
Can
other
MotoGP. Can you
believe
that? Can you believe we sat here discussing that?
No, that
none of us would have said.
Okay,
that is an amazing stat.
So what's clicked?
And from a man who doesn't like stats, that's a cracker.
Well, it's one that you can't ignore as an ex-racer. I mean, that is everything. Points make prizes, and to outscore the luminaries that he is outscoring is outstanding.
Over four races
on an independently entered motorcycle. Okay, it's a factory Honda. We know that, but it's all about having how many personnel you've got working on it, and little LCR.
Yes.
They're scratching around when they're up against Repsol Honda, which have got far, far more people here and at the factory. So at the end of the day, it's a great result. And it's another great result for Lucio Cecinello. I mean, there's a man who kept the plate spinning just long enough for Cal to come good.
Yeah, at a point when we didn't, well, you sort of off felt like he did have grounds to say, look, we're getting to the end of repairing these crash bikes, Cal. You know, we do need some results. And we were talking about it. Obviously, we talked about it on air.
So get back to it. What's clicked?
I asked him that question. I interviewed him, what was it, 10 minutes ago. I asked him that question, and he can't put his finger on it. It's not one thing. He said a combination of momentum, which we know how that works. He said a bit of luck, but he said, I feel like I deserve a bit of luck. You can't argue with that. Yeah. Yep. So, but there's not one thing. It's not, oh, now I've changed this, so I look at, I'm trying to later apex.
It never is it?
No.
My favourite quote. Valentino Rossi, when he was talking about Cal, I'm very happy for Cal. I can't do Italian accent.
Yeah, go on, carry on with that.
You started, so you'll finish.
But maybe I should have a baby.
Well, yeah, there obviously is that side to it. We, like I said, I've just interviewed him 10 minutes ago. He said, not only to me, but to the cameraman, the sound man, my producer, oh, guys, I've bought a load of what look like little croissants for the team. I've got loads here. Here, come in. And then he actually walked into his garage. Listen to this. I'm not lying. Got this tray full of these goodies and brought them out and give them to all the crew. Give me one. And the crew said, oh, they're really good. Oh, the cream one's the best. It was like this complete, I didn't even recognise this nice character.
So, is what has happened, it's obviously north of Cal's eyebrows, suddenly, to put it simply, he's not over-trying.
He's reined himself in.
He believes in himself. He knows he can do it. He's not trying to win every corner.
It's funny, we saw him in the lounge before we went out to Austria. I know Austria wasn't a great race for him and the like, but he congratulating him on the new baby Willow, of course.
Yeah.
And he looked 5 years younger.
Yeah.
He looked more relaxed. He looked, most new fathers are worn out by the entire stress of it, but he looked like it's all coming together for him.
There was that quote straight after he'd won when he said, well, I've been imagining this all my life and I thought it would be the best moment of my life, but it isn't.
Yeah, the winning the race, because he's experienced
the birth of his daughter of 10 days before.
Yeah. Well, we can pretty much vouch for that.
Yeah, whatever's happened with Cal, I thought to myself, walking away, I had a nice smile on my face, and I thought, absolute pleasure to interview him. And I'm pleased that I've been in this paddock and seen the happy, fast Cal, not the grumpy, angry man I've had to deal with.
Have you put the finger on it? All of a sudden, he's enjoying himself.
And that's what you can see that. You can see that.
Well, I think we can round that up then as a congratulations, Cal, from
absolutely,
all of us.
Yeah.
Title protagonists, Marquez and Rossi, I've got to say, rubbing his racing, and those two certainly pushed each other hard, but all's fair in love and war. And that was from my own personal perspective, great racing, nothing dirty.
I couldn't agree more. It was on the absolute
edge
limit, wasn't it? It was on the absolute limit of... this could turn so wrong so quickly, as we know, obviously, when you're touching each other at that point, and they are on the edge. It was a pleasure to watch, probably more so because of the history, the past, what we saw last year. There were none of that, them shenanigans. There were none of these almost block passing, then stopping, and all that.
It was
rubbish.
The first time they'd really raced each other since Sepang last year.
But you know what?
They enjoyed it, didn't they?
That's exactly, that word straight out of my mouth, because they will have enjoyed that so much. Because two great riders racing each other.
I was watching it thinking, this is right on the edge of acceptability,
where's this going?
I thought, if anybody pushes it a millimetre further than they are at the moment,
they'd all been lying on the ground.
Race direction would have had to be making some very interesting calls.
Pleasure to watch, though, wasn't
it? Oh, epic.
Twitter question then from Marek Haas. Why everyone is so adamant that VR46 and Marc Marquez resumed hostilities? They are closest rivals, so this was a championship duel. So say all of us.
Well put.
Wasn't a resumption of hostilities.
No.
It was just great riding, I think, great racing. And Valentino, who probably ended up with the most being pushed the most, was nowhere near cheesed off at all. He was quite happy with the racing.
In English, yes. When he spoke to the Italians, he said, in Italian, Marquez always reserves something extra for me. So there's a little hint.
Let me just even that up a bit. I'll bet you any money you like, Valentino saves a little bit up for him as well.
Yeah, because that's
which is exactly what it looked like.
You treat people how they treat you, and that's always been the case with this sport from day one, hasn't it, Keith? You know,
you
know exactly. If someone will push you on the grass, you go, all right, no problem. I know, as long as I know the rules we've got.
Who was it you put in the straw bales at Cadwell?
I can't tell you that, because it might be libelous in some way, shape or form. But somebody had been pushing me a little bit hard. When I came back from international racing into the UK and I got pushed around a little bit, I remember this bloke just shoved me twice too hard. Next time he was sitting in the hay. 50-point lead for Marquez over Rossi. Six races to go. Surely over? I don't think.
Ooh. No. I mean, it's a massive lead. Any rider would do anything to have that championship lead at this point in the season. The beauty of our sport is anything can happen. Marquez can tuck the front this weekend, and we know Valentino can win round here, so...
Thing is, they've not got the spoilers in there that would normally have. Jorge's not out to play anymore, is he? What has happened to Jorge again?
I bet Jorge will be up the front this weekend.
Yeah, but
that's not going to affect the championship, is it?
Yeah, it's normally you would have a Jorge in amongst that lot to really split things up. I mean, Mark has done a great job of managing himself in a difficult year. I mean, somebody said to me this morning when I walked in the paddock, can you imagine what he's going to be like if he gets a proper bike again?
I've already thought that as well. Well, if he does win this year, that's three championships in 4 years, you know, and he's on his way.
What's happened this year, and all of us are old enough to know to expect the unexpected in this sport. With what's happened this year, if he gets a gentle cruise to the title through the rest of the year, I will be very, very, very surprised.
That's a fair point. Yeah, if he scores in every round, if he manages to finish every race riding the way he has been slightly conservative, but he wasn't conservative in Silverstone at all, was he?
Quite the reverse.
So
Bradley Smith actually was quite eloquent, as he always is, when he joined Jules and I for free practice 4 at Silverstone, when he said that, you know, people don't realise, you know, you hero worship these guys, but you don't realise just how little it takes to undermine the feel you have in a motorcycle and how much difference that now makes. You know, we're all within sort of top 20 are all within a second or thereabouts of each other's time. Mm. And it only takes the slightest loss of feel or confidence, and it puts the like of Dani Pedrosa, if you think in Austria, right back there. Yeah. He couldn't make that thing stick anywhere, could he? He looked terrible.
Yeah.
And Jorge...
Lorenzo is the perfect example of that. And it shocked us all a little bit, because yes, we all knew that he wasn't absolutely bulletproof, but I didn't think he was... I don't use the word weak, because
fragile.
He's slightly more fragile than I expected.
64 points off now. I mean, what's his motivation? Because he's not with that team next year. He goes to Ducati.
The usual racer's motivation, Keith.
Yeah, well, he has to sort his season out, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He has to finish the season on a high because, you know, Ducati are paying him big, big money.
Well, let's talk about Ducati. What about that situation?
Yeah.
He's going to Ducati. What on earth is Gigi Delinea thinking at the moment? Well, he's got a fragile bloke on a motorcycle that, if it's not perfect, he can't ride. And that Ducati, you've just ridden one, a factory one, and it is not the motorbike that you would really want if you were Jorge.
Not at all. It's not perfect. It's incredibly physical. Every rider I've spoken to, I was speaking to Scott Redding today about it, and he was saying he was backing up what everybody else says.
And this Scott Redding's a big
strong
tough,
lad.
Strong lad.
It's so physical. His words were, it just wants to go straight, which is what I'd been saying after I'd come off the bike. So, do you know what? If you was Ducati, these are the rumours you hear in the paddock. I don't know how true this is, but they're 25 million deep into Jorge for a two-year deal. Like, we're not talking... This is massive. This is ridiculous telephone numbers.
Yeah, but they all said, he's here to win the world title.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
We want someone who wins the world title. Yeah.
Agostini put it best. And was it down at Jerez when he was interviewed in pit lane for BT Sport? And he said, make no mistake, they've not got him to win the races. They've got him to win the title. Yeah. Absolutely.
And anything short of that, they'll be disappointed. And the fact that they've got rid of probably the wrong Andrea, someone who you can rely on.
I said that from the beginning.
For backup wins, yep. They've put all their eggs in one basket. If you were sat in the Ducati boardrooms, they will be sweating.
Hmm.
I think Mr. Godmire from Audi is here this weekend.
Twitter question again from Damon Grimshaw. Do you think the season is a sign of things changing? By that, I mean different race winners and competition. First time we've had 7 out of 7, seven different winners. I mean, that's remarkable when you look at the manufacturers that have won as well. I think that we've never had a year quite like this.
No, I mean, absolute credit to Dorna. We've said it before when we're commentating. They've got the formula right. They've worked so hard. It's taken years, hasn't it, of bizarre...
To persuade the factories to go down this road.
Yeah, with the bizarre CRT rules, which was...
Well, that was Carmelo's threat that the factories thought he would never carry out.
And absolute credit to him that he did all that. But they've gone through all that, let's say, a bit of nonsense, and it was hard for us, even on the inside, to understand what was actually going on and where this was going to end. Well, this is where it ends. And what a fantastic...
Yep,
only if they envisaged that it would be this good.
The last bit of nonsense that they had to deal with, of course, was Honda. They had to get Honda to agree to this electronics package, to that ECU package, to get the spec ECU across it. Once they agreed with that, it's brought Honda back...
Yeah.
Because they don't have the sophistication anymore of the electronics to control that wayward motorcycle. It's brought them back and all the independent teams forward. So they've kind of met in the middle, haven't they?
Yeah, and it is. I mentioned this at Silverstone, but what a golden era of our sport we've got right now. You know, you look back to the 80s of the golden era, but I mean, it doesn't get any better than this with these different winners.
And it's not like, let's say, the season year 2000, post Mick Doohan, when there were 7 or 8 winners in the year, but it's generally regarded as a fairly, to put it mildly, average year in terms of talent. This is the same number of winners, but with genuine all-time greats lurking. More than 2 or 3 of them.
Yeah.
Okay, 7 different winners this year. Who's going to be the 8th?
Well, you'd have to say Pedrosa, because he wins one every year. He's not won a race yet this year, and I interviewed him today, and he said that he gained a lot of confidence from Silverstone, and he said it started to feel like it should feel.
On a track he doesn't like, in conditions he doesn't like.
Yeah, so, I mean, you can't argue. Pedrosa has a win in him. You know, every time we write him off, he pulls it out. He did it last year. Remember, he won the 2 races.
So where's he going to win? Maybe Aragon.
Remember what he did to Valentino there last year?
Yes.
Valentino said, where's that come from?
Yes, as did we all.
Yeah. Indeed. Okay, British Grand Prix. I mean, it's a big deal for all of us as broadcasters, BT Sport, as men that have been around this paddock all our lives. It's a big deal. But families that are involved in it as well, the Lowe's family in particular, proud day for Alex Lowe's in MotoGP, taken over from Bradley Smith, Sam Lowe's on pole in Moto2. I mean, what you're close to them, Neil. I mean, what does it mean for the for the Lowe's family in that situation?
Incredible as well, because they've not had the, I call it the silver spoon upbringing. They've not come from a real wealthy family, and they weren't racing in Spain when they were 12, like, you know, some other kids have had the opportunity to do. They've done it the hard way. Alex obviously did his first ever Grand Prix at Silverstone, but he was, you know, even in 2012, he was still labouring, basically. He didn't have he had a real job grafting, whilst everybody else on the grid that he was racing against, they were all professional bike racers then. So, I mean, obviously it was just a sad day for Sam, because it would have been the ultimate for him to win the British Grand Prix, and it was there. For me, I thought it was there for the taking. And
he's had form for being able to perform late on in a race as well.
I'd love to agree wholeheartedly with that, but I still think he's had a problem beating Lutie.
I don't think so. But obviously we're not always going to agree.
No,
but what I'd said is, when I was watching it, I thought Sam will crash trying. Which what I meant by that is he will throw everything at it.
Yep.
So he's gonna battle with Lutie, or he'd rather crash.
Yes,
I could just tell he was going out all for the win.
Just a Tom Lutie moment. How good for him off that horrible crash in Checo to come back and do that at Silverstone.
Yeah, there is a God.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a fact.
Yeah.
Now, you know, karma is something that we believe in occasionally in this paddock, and I think Lutie suffered the positive side of that at the time. Interesting tweet I saw from the Lowe's boys. Can't remember who it came from. Sam, I think. Who's the best? Sam or Alex? He tweeted that out.
Yeah.
It wasn't somebody trying to wind everybody else up. He tweeted out, who's the best? I never did see who actually...
No. I saw it and ignored it completely.
So did I.
Anyone who knows anything about the Lowe's twins, keep well away from that subject. I'll tell you who's the best, right? And you know I know them very, very well. They are identical twins. They are the same. That's the way I see it. They are the same. They have the same speed. And actually, their sort of record of racing against each other is pretty split. They've gone on completely different routes. Good
probably
example.
Probably a good thing.
Yeah, it's probably a good thing. But like... Sam's very well, as we know, incredibly respected in this paddock. Everyone thinks he's a real talent. Alex isn't respected at all, or he wasn't until people saw him for the first time on a MotoGP bike. And now, finally, hopefully, people are realising that. Do you know what? Alex Lowe's actually... is possibly as good as his brother.
Well, he's got another go at it this weekend, of course, and we'll all be rooting for Alex because a second go here at Misano... Tough track, hot conditions, but he'll know this place.
He knows that he raced here on the Superbike and it was similar conditions, so he knows what this track feels like. It is the opposite to Silverstone. It's a very greasy track because it's always hot, you know, in the high 20s. So, yeah, it'd be certainly a different feel for him.
And we'll know by the end of the weekend whether he's doing Aragon as well.
We will indeed. We wish Bradley well, of course, in those circumstances. We're certainly not wishing him to extend his recuperation so that Alex can have a better go on it, but... at least Alex is in the chair.
All communications from Bradley Smith so far have been about 4 in the morning, post-anaesthetic and on the painkillers, so yeah, gibberish.
All the sort of what you hear in the paddock of people that I guess would know is it looks like he will probably miss Aragon.
Yeah.
But it's looking like then he'll be fit for Japan, which is good news.
Yeah.
Back to Sam then, just for a moment if I can. What was Johan Zarco thinking of, and... he got a penalty for it, a 30-second penalty, put him outside of the points. He's outraged, it would appear, doesn't think he did anything wrong. And I have to say that I got a fair bit of Twitter flack for not condemning him, but for falling, I think I said 60-40 on the side of Sam regarding that. I mean, where I see it, and please, as I know you will, correct me if I'm even near to being wrong, but it looked absolutely to me like Sam... He had the eye line. He was heading for the apex. He could not possibly have anticipated that Johan was likely to be on the curb and T-boning him in the side. That's how it looked as an ex-racer's point of view from where I'm sat. How did you see it, Neil?
Exactly. You've just said, you've took the words out of my mouth. That's why I saw it. What I think the only stepping back from it and watching it when I got home was he made a mistake.
Absolutely.
It wasn't intentional. I think all this, because Sam said in his interviews that he thought it might have been intentional, really. I don't think it was intentional. Yes, he made a mistake and he got penalised for it. Sort of end off. Zarco's not a dirty rider.
No.
He's an intelligent rider and he is going for the championship. He's leading the championship. You can't risk doing that to somebody because that's a 50-50. Will I get away with this? Will I crash as well? So he did not do that on purpose. He made a mistake.
Indeed. He's a gentleman and he's a fair racer, Johan Zarco. And
as a non-ex-racer, I have nothing to add to that, by the way. I think that is all we need to know.
Obviously, Tom Lutie, you've mentioned him already, off the hospital bed and onto the top step of the podium, which is absolutely fantastic for him. Bo Benschneider's P3 ends a 22-year drought of podiums for Dutch riders. How about that? Can't believe it. I'm just looking down here and reading that as I said it.
Who the hell was that then?
It was Luke.
Luke Bedelier.
Yeah, the
125.
I was in that race. It was 1994. I was in that 125 race. I remember Luke very well. So it's hard to believe, isn't it? Because when we think of the Dutch riders, I always think of them as a fast motorcycle racing nation. So,
Having seen Will Hartog in the Barry Sheen tribute at Silverstone,
in his old leathers,
and white. His hair now.
Do they still fit him?
Yeah,
yes,
still fit him. I can't believe it. Mind you, he didn't get off the bike much in those days, anyway, did he?
No, he was the king of sitting in the middle of the seat.
But Bo Benschneider then P3, ending a 22-year drought of podium for Dutch riders, and I think that's about the end for us as well, gentlemen. Cheers, lads. Be sure to download our review podcast following the race here at Misano, and remember, you can watch every session live this weekend on BT Sport 2. See you then.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.